Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Season of Sports with me, Azra Begovic, where today we're going to be talking about the football financial world. It's a crazy world out there at the moment. Lots of things going on, and there's going to be a lot of financial implications. And who better than Kieran McGuire, who's the author of the book called The Price of Football, a man with huge insight into the finance of football. And he's joining me here today. Welcome to the show, Kieran.
Thank you very much, Azmir.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. Listen to you. You seem like a busy man. Everywhere I turn, podcasts, TV, you're on there. So well done you.
Yes, it has. Well, there's no proper football to talk about. So therefore, I think the broadcasters are searching for anything to fill the airwaves. And I seem to be the fall guy at present.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, you're giving us amazing insight. And it's a crazy world at the moment, obviously, with everything that's happened over the last couple of months. And there's some huge financial issues that are happening as we speak, and obviously it could happen and get even bigger as we go on. I mean, I want to touch basically on English football, but obviously that can relate to European football as well. What is the biggest financial problem facing the Premier League and the EFL? I guess the pyramid of English football.
Well, ultimately, any business, and football is a business, you know, as much as it's a sport we love, it's still a business. It focuses on two things, income and costs. And as far as football is concerned, you've got three broad sources of income in match day from fans. So clearly that's in hibernation at present. Nothing's taking place. So potentially clubs might have to start giving fans money back if they have outstanding season tickets. We've then got the broadcast income and the broadcast partners of the Premier League domestically have been very patient to date, but potentially they could be having to pay back. I think it's estimated as 768 million sterling. So that'd be close to 900 million euro in money from the broadcasters. The overseas broadcasters, the Premier League is a very successful global product. They are probably more anxious to get their money back. The domestic broadcasters here in the UK, in Sky and BT Sport, they need football because football, without football, they really don't have a product. So therefore, I think they're being patient. The overseas broadcasters, you know, Premier League, it's a good one to have on your roster. But, you know, if you are playing in Italy, then clearly Serie A is the main TV product, you know, La Liga in Spain and so on. So the Premier League clubs are concerned that they might have start having requests to pay that money back. And the third source of income is commercial. It's the sponsorship agreements that clubs have with their commercial partners. And again, at present, the clubs are okay, but a lot of those deals will expire at the end of the year. A lot of installments will be due to be received from those sponsors. And if it's no play, it's no pay. Because how can you sponsor something which isn't taking place? So the big fear is that without a resumption of football, some money is going to have to start flowing back, and clubs are committed to paying wages, to paying rent and other costs. So the losses in the Premier League and the losses are around about for 2/3 of clubs, even without pandemic, could easily escalate. When we drop into the lower leagues in the EFL, there's less dependency upon TV money and more on fans turning up, coming through the turnstiles, watching the matches, buying the catering products, buying the merchandise. And those clubs are in a far more dangerous position because they are more dependent upon money from the fans themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an incredible situation, really, because everything filters down from the top, you know, from what I understand. And Steve Parrish wrote, I think, a really brilliant piece in the Times a few days ago. And, you know, him stating that as much as the return in football sooner rather than later is not about money, it kind of is, because so many people's livelihoods depend on it. You know, there's something like, yeah, 700 or odd players out of contract. I think that might be in the EFL alone. This summer, and that's obviously going to filter down. And I think there's obviously ways. I mean, focusing on the revenue alone, what could clubs do? Because obviously, if we do go back to playing behind closed doors, the TV revenue will surely go up in a way for TV companies, because what are people going to do? They're going to watch it on TV. Is there a way of making that work? Is there ways of coming to agreements to kind of offset losses in different ways?
I think people have to use technology. They'll have to be progressive and ingenious. As far as the Premier League is concerned, no doubt there's an awful lot of people that do want to watch it. So what clubs could do is that they could approach their season ticket holders and say, look, we can't physically get you to the ground, but we have the streams coming from the broadcasters. And what we'll do is that for every season ticket holder, we will give you a voucher, we will give you a link. So although you can't physically see the matches at the stadium themselves, we will give you an opportunity to experience the match. Now, as a fan, as a season ticket holder myself, it's not the same. It's not as good. But I think most fans will take the view that they want their club to be in existence in a year's time, in 10 years' time, because that's the nature of being a football fan. And I think a lot of fans will go along with that, apart from those, of course, who can't afford it, because as a sideline, well, as a major issue as far as the pandemic is concerned, there will be hundreds of thousands, or not millions, of people losing their jobs in the UK. And clearly that will also be the case in Europe. So I think streaming is one option. And what the broadcasters could do is to come to some sort of arrangement whereby perhaps the Premier League will give the main broadcasters, they might give them an extra 20 games free for this season. And then they make the rest available on a streaming service where people do pay not the same amount as a match ticket, but even so, any additional money coming in is better than none.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they could probably add an extra game a weekend, going forward as well. So there's always different ways of doing it. I think the more worrying thing is further down the football pyramid, the EFL and the National League and how it's going to affect them. I mean, kind of touching on that, because a lot of what people maybe sometimes don't know is a lot of small businesses and people are affected by this. The pubs around the football grounds, for one, the food stands, all these small little independent pop-up shops and with scarves and football memorabilia. What's going to happen to them?
They're going to be in terrible trouble. I mean, I work in Liverpool, and Liverpool is a global football club as well as being a local football club. So every weekend that Liverpool at home, you cannot get a hotel. Every hotel's booked out because they've got a huge Scandinavian fan base. They've got a Far East fan base. That they've got lots of huge number of fans coming across from Ireland. So Liverpool, as a football club, does a huge amount for the city. It's the same with Manchester United in Manchester, clubs in London. When Spurs are at home, because of Son's influence, they'll get huge numbers of Korean fans coming across. So a lot of people in the supply chain will be impacted, and sadly their businesses are going to suffer, and many of those businesses are going to cease to trade. The longer this pandemic continues, the impact on not just on football but on the whole economy is going to be devastating.
No, absolutely, and that's the thing, the terrifying part about this, how is this going to filter down? So hopefully we can get back to some normality. Going back to the football clubs, I mean, do you know of any clubs that are in trouble of going bust because of this? Are any clubs on the edge? I guess there's going to be troubling times for some of them also.
I think as far as the Premier League is concerned, most clubs have probably got enough cash to see them over for a few months. And what they will be hoping is that some agreement will be made for the following season with the broadcasters. So perhaps, there will be a few more matches made available and the broadcasters will buy them. But there's still going to be a hole in the finances because the money from match day, it's around about 13% of the total of that of the Premier League, but that's still around about 660 million sterling. So that's what, 750 million euro. That's a big hole to have to fill. The clubs will be making cost savings. We've already seen potential for redundancies in smaller clubs taking place. I think in some of the big clubs, if the furlough scheme is allowed to be is maintained, then that will be one avenue that more and more clubs will have to take. They have been criticised to date in the Premier League, but I think they'll have no choice if we're having the same conversation in 6 months' time and we're not playing any form of football.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a difficult difficult time for a lot of these clubs. Nobody knows. I think that's the tricky part. I mean, we're quite in limbo here in Italy. I've been here now a couple of weeks and quarantined for 14 days, and now we're kind of back into doing medical testing and hoping to start training later on this week. But does that mean we're going to get back to action? You know, I don't know. And I think the uncertainty is what's killing everyone, because I think if we could establish that date, that way when we could come back, or even for next season, and this season was a write-off, at least you can plan, you can offset budgets, right? I mean, am I right in saying that would be really beneficial if we could get some decisions here soon? I think there's a deadline of May 25th from UEFA. So you have to have your plan in place by then. Am I right in saying that?
That's correct. The more certainty that everybody has, the better. But even so, it would only take a tiny incident for things to go wrong. If the players are coming back, they're in a sealed environment. You know, what happens if a coach driver has COVID and he's bringing some referees to a match? We could wipe out the whole of the referees of Serie A or the Premier League if these people are traveling together. So the same could happen in a match. You know, a player doesn't realize he's got the symptoms. He's got COVID-19. He plays in a match. Then the whole of his team, the whole of the opposition team, would have to be quarantined for 14 days. As would the referees, as would the management team, as would the broadcasters. So the implications, it will only take one player to catch the disease from any source, and then the whole of the remainder of the season once again will grind to a halt.
Kieran Maguire joining me here, the author of the book called Price of Football, and also now with his own podcast, The Price of Football. Am I right in saying that, Kieran?
Yes. I was persuaded to do it by somebody from the BBC. I wasn't convinced that people were interested in football finance, but we were very fortunate. One of the UK's best stand-up comedians. We approached him, Kevin Day, and he's agreed to come on the show. So he makes what is a very dull subject, and I'm a very dull man. He makes it entertaining. So yeah, we're doing okay. We're very pleased with the level of audience that we've generated to date.
Well, I've listened to a couple episodes, and you guys are doing a great job at the moment. So well done for providing the great insight and obviously the content as well. Just a couple of things that I also want to touch on was obviously cases like France shutting down their league and calling it a day basically for this season, Holland as well. I mean, how does that work in terms of teams that are relegated, and could there be lawsuits? But if you had a lawsuit, what would you be suing against? You know, this is a world pandemic. I mean, what crisis? What could you do? What would you sue against?
Well, you could sue you could sue the leagues themselves, because at the start of the season you have committed to play it could be 34 games if you're in an 18 team league or 38 games if you're in a 20 team league, and if you are being relegated without the ability to play the full season, you could argue that your club has been discriminated against, and the same goes for those clubs who are trying to get promoted. So even if we say, well, the top two teams in a division are going to be promoted upwards, the sides who are third, fourth and fifth, they might say, well, hold on, we've just struck some form. We feel that we had some easy fixtures coming ahead. And so therefore, we were in a false position when the league was terminated. And therefore, we're going to sue for some form of financial compensation, because we would have generated more money had we been promoted. And for those clubs coming down, they will argue that they will have suffered financially, because they'll only be getting the money from the lower leagues if they are relegated. And therefore, they've been denied playing in the higher leagues. So that will be the nature of the legal claims. And certainly speaking to some lawyers, their belief is that if seasons are not completed, then the lawyers will be very busy. And I think it's fair to say they will be very well remunerated as a result of this.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be interesting because it's you know, you're almost damned if you do and damned if you don't, because if leaks continue and you risk health and different things, that could have an effect. But if you don't, then you risk legal cases and all that kind of stuff. So it's just an incredible situation, really, one that we can't seem to get any clarity on. But hey, such is the world that we live in now. I want to touch on the transfer market. Obviously, we understand that the transfer market will be hit. I'm sure teams will spend less, which I firmly think is a good thing. You know, I think this is a good time for football and sport in general to kind of get a little grip on itself, have a little check on itself, and maybe get some things back in order. Do you think the transfer market, I mean, when could it be? That's the thing. Nobody even knows when the transfer market could be. And what sort of impact do you foresee happening on the transfer market?
I think the transfer market is going to be mixed. There's a chance that it could be extended over a longer period of time, simply because UEFA say that we don't know how can we commit ourselves to a summer market and a January market when we don't know whether football is taking place in August at the end of the summer market, and is football going to be taking place in January as well? So I think there'll be an extension of the period of time of the markets, and the other issue is, as you rightly mentioned, will be that market prices are likely to fall unless the selling club is in a very strong financial position. So, you know, there's a lot of talk here in the UK at present about Jordan Sancho coming back to the UK, and he's been linked with Liverpool, with Manchester United, with Chelsea. Dortmund have a very strong balance sheet. They're a very well-run club. So I think they'll be able to resist the initial offers made by clubs. Now, if we contrast that with some other clubs in Europe and also in the UK, if they are short of cash, if they're wondering, do they have sufficient money to pay the next wage bill? And let's say the wages are due for the end of July and it's the 20th of July and they've got no money, then the chances are they're going to accept lower offers for their star players than they would have done 12 months ago. There has been a report done by one of the analysis agencies in Switzerland. I think it's called CIES, and they estimated around about 2 to 3 weeks ago that the overall transfer market was, in their opinion, going to fall by around about 30%. If the pandemic extends for a long period of time, there's only going to have one impact upon prices, except for the players going from one elite club to another, and that's going to be a very severe depression in prices.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some of the smaller clubs will feel that even more because, you know, maybe a player that they sold for 10 million before, they'll only be able to sell for 5. And that would have a big impact on their finances, wouldn't it?
Very, very much so. And different clubs have different business models. Some clubs deliberately try to recruit players young and then sell them on to profit. And that makes up for the fact that they've got less income being generated. So if we take a look at Chelsea, Chelsea have a huge number of youth players and academy players who they bring through the system. They then loan them out to other clubs in Europe. Those clubs that the players then prove themselves and Chelsea go on to sell them. Chelsea are going to miss out, I think, in the future markets because the buying clubs will say, well, yes, we do like your player, but actually there's three or four other players in Europe who can take up his same position, and that they're selling clubs are desperate for cash and therefore they're selling them at very low prices. So it will depress and it will certainly impact upon those clubs who historically have been good at generating profits from player sales.
Absolutely. Absolutely interesting times ahead. The last thing I want to touch on, it's kind of a interesting subject for me, and I did a piece with Henry Winter the other day, and I mentioned this, and he said, if there's one thing you could change in football, what would you do? And I said, I would introduce salary caps. I like the American model in that sense. I think, one, it provides competitive balance, of course, but I do think salary caps, and I think it would be very difficult to implement in the Premier League, initially anyway, maybe even so the Championship. But I think League One, League Two and below, I think a salary cap is necessary. There's too many clubs, I feel like, that are struggling for whatever reason. You know, I looked at some of your reports, and teams spending £2 for every pound they make is ludicrous to me. I don't understand how this is possible. I think that there has to be more responsibility by the clubs to run their clubs in a better way. So I would really strongly think about introducing salary caps. Where do you stand on that subject?
Well, for salary caps to work, they need to be policed properly. We presently do have a salary cap in Leagues 1 and 2, but there are ways of getting around it. And the problem is that there are smart accountants and there are smart lawyers, and they will find loopholes in the rules. So it is difficult to implement. As far as the Premier League is concerned, the Premier League also did have a salary cap until the start of this season, but club owners voted to abolish it. So unless there is a will to implement cost control in the form of a salary cap, and unless that will is coming from all of the club owners, I think we're going to be in a very dangerous situation. The worst division in terms of a salary cap would be the Championship. And the reason for that is that you have clubs coming down from the Premier League receiving parachute payments. And your first year of parachute payments is around about £41 million. Well, the average income for a Championship club who is not in receipt of parachute payments is around about £30 million. So you're already a long way behind those clubs in receipt of parachute payments. And parachute payments have been described today by Rick Parry, who's head of the EFL, as an evil that needs to be eradicated. The problem is that parachute payments improve the competitive balance in the Premier League, but they reduce the competitive balance in the Championship, because it allows club owners in the Premier League to go out and sign talented players on 3-, 4-, 5-year contracts from Europe. And they know that whilst they will get a pay deduction if the club's relegated, that pay deduction might be 20 to 25%. Whereas if you were to really price in the difference in income between the Premier League and the Championship, those pay cuts would have to be in the region of 85 to 90%. And I can't see many talented players agreeing to terms of that nature.
Yeah. I think it's a fascinating. What was the salary cap in League One, League Two? Out of curiosity, what is the situation
in League One? The salary cap is 60% of turnover plus what they call football fortune, which is cup income, money from owners and transfer income. So it's 60% in League One and it's 50% in League Two. But yeah, trying to implement it is difficult. Yeah, the EFL has limited resources itself. And we're assuming here that the clubs want to apply the scheme. You know, I'm aware of some clubs. What they will do is that they will say, well, the salary cap only applies to players. So therefore, perhaps they'll employ the player's mother or his partner or a close family friend or things of this nature. I'm aware of some clubs who are paying school fees for the partners of players as a way of getting around the salary cap. So if clubs want to find a way around the rules, they will do. So unless everybody buys into the salary cap, it's going to be a really tough job to monitor.
Because I think, because that's, again, if you're saying it's 60% of something, when you look at the wide, as you say, wide variety of clubs in those leagues, again, that destroys competitive balance, because, you know, bigger clubs, 60% is going to be much more than a smaller club, 60%. I'm thinking a flat, straight cap, really. And if your income, and I think the way it's calculated in America, for example, is if the income for one league, as you say, is 100 million, then that 100 million gets distributed equally to all the clubs. And then obviously they can have a percentage as well of their revenue. So they have to almost calulate a flat cap. I think, would that ever pass, or do you don't see that ever happening?
Well, there has been talk of a flat cap in Leagues 1 and 2, But I mean, in terms of the NFL, and the NFL system works really well in many ways, partly due to the fact that it's a sealed league because there is no relegation. So what we also see in the NFL is, as well as having a salary cap, so I think it's something like $185 million per season, something of that nature, you also have a very more democratic distribution of income between the clubs. So all merchandising is split evenly between all clubs in the division. All the TV money is also split evenly between the clubs in the division. And when it comes to match day tickets, the home club keeps 60%. The other 40% goes into a pool, and that is equally distributed as well. So you've got the same amount of money being spent on wages, and you've got the same amount of money being received by clubs. I can't see Manchester United and Liverpool agreeing to that in the Premier League. I can't see Sunderland and Portsmouth agreeing to that in League One. And that's the problem that I think we face. Is it too late to have equal distributions of income? You know, the big clubs in the Premier League, they keep pushing to have the TV distribution model revised and revamped so that they get more of the money, but they've already got huge advantages in terms of ticket sales and their commercial partner arrangements.
Fascinating, isn't it? Well, it's interesting times, Karen. I mean, I really appreciate your insights. Can't wait to see obviously what happens in the world and obviously in the world of football. Hope you're well. Hope your family's well and safe. I really appreciate you coming here in the Season of Sports and joining me and giving such great insight. Guys, make sure you follow Kieran on Twitter at Kieran McGuire. Make sure you listen to his podcast, Price of Football. Get the book as well. Some great stuff in there. And really appreciate you coming on, Kieran. Thanks a lot.
Thanks
for your
very
time.
Much for the invite, Asmir, and stay safe. And good luck to everybody in Milan and the whole of Italy.
So, guys, I hope you enjoyed that chat with Kieran McGuire. I think that was an awesome insight, especially in the uncertain times that we live in now. I think it's been great. So really appreciate Kieran for coming on. Make sure you check out his book, Price of Football, and his podcast as well, which is called Price of Football. So we're going to get into huddle right away, but obviously a couple of things to touch on in the world of sport. Andy Dalton signing with Dallas Cowboys as a backup quarterback. I think incredible stroke of genius from Jerry Jones and his crew. You know, he's going to provide great cover for $3 million a year. They released Cooper Rush, who was the previous backup. I thought that was an incredibly smart move. And really well done to the Cowboys, because that gives you so much insurance. And now these days, you know, the backup quarterback, I think, is more valuable than ever. I think you see what happens to teams who don't have that position filled. Now, of course, Andy Dalton's a premium player, and he doesn't come available every single day to take up that sort of spot. But, you know, I think that gives him a lot of insurance, especially with a little bit of uncertainty with Dak Prescott going forward. Episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance are out, so can't wait to watch that. You know, that's something we all get to look forward to on a Sunday evening. Okay, let's get into our questions from our fans in the huddle. Make sure you keep getting them into us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We're all over social media. Milan Obsession asks, Milan are testing players and resuming limited individual training this week as per government. Although we know they're still trying to determine if Serie A will return this summer, how does it feel to be taking the first steps to returning? Are you apprehensive? Well, I mean, we're taking it all step by step. You know, we've got medical testing, then hopefully training in the small individual groups from there, and then we'll see what happens. You know, we're very much day to day. I don't think anyone's looking too far ahead, but we're all hopeful. We get to play again. We all miss football. We all love the game. So there's nothing more we like than training and playing and being with our teammates. So from my point of view, if we can do that and we get the green light, then and that would be awesome. So we'll see. But again, don't want to plan too far ahead, really. It's such a delicate situation. I think too many unknowns before we can really determine things going forward. So great question. But yeah, that brings us to the end, guys. You know, really appreciate you all listening. We'll be back next week, I would imagine, with another episode. Keep listening to us. We're on Audioboom, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Get them in. Get your questions in, get reviews in, let us know what you think, and can't wait to hear you from you guys. Be back with you very, very soon. Thanks a lot.